Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Bob Dylan said, "A man is a success if he gets up in the morning and goes to bed at night, and in between does what he wants to do." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who does what he wants to do. Today's playmaker wanted to create a restaurant that he and his wife would go to, and he named it after a frozen margarita. With us today is a CEO who is also a passionate surfer and wrestler. This great playmaker is Jim Barron. Jim is CEO of Blue Mesa Grill and TNT/Tacos and Tequila. Now, walking through Manhattan Beach, California with their children, Jim and Liz were hungry. All they sought was a restaurant that served delicious, locally sourced food with an artful atmosphere and a moderate price point. But nothing of the sort was in sight. In 1988, Jim and Liz took a leap of faith, named their place after a frozen blue margarita, and the rest is history. Jim is a 25-year veteran of the restaurant industry and CEO of the Blue Mesa Grill in the Dallas area. He's also president of Mesa SW Restaurants Incorporated, which includes TNT/Tacos and Tequila, a younger concept encompassing a grill and tequila bar. Prior to opening Blue Mesa with Liz in 1988, Jim spent 8 years as an executive with Taco Bell and El Torito Restaurants. Jim has escaped one career to the next, going from community service to psychologist, to trainer, to corporate executive, to entrepreneur. But at his heart, he's an entrepreneur in addition to being a surfer and a wrestler. Wow, there's a lot to talk about. Jim, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Well, I want to find out how this all began. So tell us how an entrepreneur, a surfer, and a wrestler began his career in India, Nepal, and Afghanistan.
Well, that's an interesting story. I went to University of Wisconsin, got a BA in psychology, and I had a minor in Indian and Buddhist studies.
And where did that minor come from?
You know, I'm an ex-hippie. But where it came from was Wisconsin had a very unique Indian studies department that was philosophically based rather than historically based. And I was studying psychology, and at the time, a lot of Eastern thought and, you know, books like Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse and things like that were popular. And I was thinking I could combine Eastern thinking with my Western psychological approach and pair it with a clinical psych degree. And ultimately, I did get a PhD in counseling psych from NYU and am a psychologist. But I didn't really pursue the Indian studies part of the psychology, but I did pursue going to India. So my Indian studies TA and I took off to go to India. We broke up in Copenhagen, and I said, I'll go by myself. And so I went to India, bought a houseboat on the Ganges, lived for 6 months there. Left, went to Nepal, trekked in the Himalayas by myself for 6 weeks, came back. It was too hot in India to stay, and I went to Afghanistan and went to the little village of Bamiyan where the Taliban blew up those sculptures that were in the Hindu Kush and stayed there and then eventually came back and then ultimately entered a PhD program at NYU and started my career, and somewhat humorously, but somewhat reality is, you know, my life has been learning from one failure after another. I ran a community youth program in Long Island, drug prevention program called LINK, which I started and, you know, became a very well-funded agency by the time I left. And then got my PhD and was a behavioral psychologist and, you know, one day realized, you know what, I don't really like this. I really missed running a larger program, the business aspects of creating something and sitting in the room working with individual patients, it seemed a little stupefying to me. And I also felt, you know, what am I doing, 28 years old, trying to help people? I haven't even lived a life. And so I decided to look into training and development with the idea that maybe I could go into management consulting. And I had an interview at IBM, and this very wise HR person said, "Why would I hire you to consult with business? You have no business experience whatsoever." He said, "You need to go get a job, kid." And so I went to a training and development conference, and before I even entered, I saw a job, you know, sign. You know, they were interviewing for jobs, and this HR director from Taco Bell was there, and saw my background with a PhD in counseling psych and a lot of the training and development stuff that I was into. And he said, "You know, we're really looking for training people at Taco Bell. We just bought it. I'm with Pepsi." And Pepsi had bought Taco Bell and Pizza Hut and eventually KFC before they spun out as Yum. And I was hired at Taco Bell, and that was just a fantastic job. Pepsi's a very strategically oriented company, very performance-driven, and they gave me just a fantastic job of developing hourly and management training programs. I ultimately built a university set up, you know, a Taco Bell University. I copied McDonald's and looked at what they were doing, built regional training centers. And then in terms of my line of one failure after another, I realized that HR was not the key department in any large corporation. They really looked to the line operations people to become the executives. And HR was only as good as when there was money for it. And as soon as there was a tight budget, HR was the first thing they cut. And I said, you know, I really need to get into operations. I took a job at El Torito and was VP of operations support. So I was a little closer to operations. I had the marketing, HR, purchasing, R&D departments reporting to me, but still wasn't in operations. And then ultimately, I was going to leave El Torito. And the CEO, who's a very famous guy in the Mexican food industry, Larry Cano, said, "You know, go out to Texas. We've screwed that up so badly. You couldn't make it any worse, Baron. So why don't you go there and try to turn that place around?"
Now, you were in California at the time. Was that correct?
So I was in Manhattan Beach, surfing every other day. I was on a walking street. Liz and I bought a house on a walking street, Manhattan Beach. I could grab my board and walk down to the check out the surf. She was always laughing at me because I was always going down to the ocean to see if there was surf, see if there were waves. And commuting to Irvine, where Taco Bell was, and ultimately El Torito was right around the corner as well in Irvine. So I commuted to Irvine for a decade, you know, 8-9 years, first with Taco Bell and then with El Torito.
Let me ask this, because you moved from career to career.
Yep.
And you were at the right place at the right time.
Yes.
Things happen for a reason.
Yes.
And you were there, and those things happen. We're going to come to Blue Mesa in just a few moments. But you mentioned surfing, and that is a passion of yours, with all the surfing available in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But tell us a little bit about wrestling, too, because that's something that you still have done. And correct me if I'm wrong, you recently won a bronze medal in wrestling. So how does all that fit in before we get into the restaurant business?
You know, it's funny. There's a term, I think it's called the Zeigarnik effect, and that is if you've done something but you never really completed it, there's always that fantasy of going back and being successful. So I was a very good wrestler, but when I went to Wisconsin, it was just too much to try to wrestle and go to school. I mean, I remember going to wrestling practice. It was 30 below zero. I'd come out of wrestling practice still sweating, and you know, the icicles would form in my nose before I could get back to my dorm room. And I was in pre-med before I decided to get into psychology. And it's just trying to do all of that and have a girlfriend and socialize, I gave up wrestling. And so there was always the feeling like, hey, I never really did what I could in wrestling. And the funny story is, so we were living near St. Mark's in Texas, you know, great school in Preston Hollow. And I decided to go over to see if I could work out. And I went over there, and Coach Ortega, a very famous wrestling coach, he's left now, but he was at St. Mark's, and they had a very good program. I said, hey, could I work out? So I went, worked out, and he paired me up with a state champ who kicked my butt. And I came home. I was like laying on the couch hyperventilating. And Liz came in, and she said, what the heck's happening to you? And I said, I went over to wrestling. She said, in your mind, you went over to wrestling. In their mind, a pedophile came over there to work out with teenage boys. I said, yeah, come on, give me a break. But anyway, I got encouraged there to enter veterans tournaments. And I went to Las Vegas, initially took a bronze medal in the national tournament for veteran freestyle wrestling. But the next year I took a gold medal, and then got a call by the Olympic coach who said, you know, there's a world veterans champion in the Czech Republic. We'd like you to represent the U.S. And I said, wow, okay. So I got the uniform in the mail and all of that, with the expectation there was some big team flight going there. Really, you had to pay for yourself, pay for the tournament in cash. They didn't even acknowledge me when I got there. But ultimately, I wrestled 5 matches, and I took 3rd in the world. I think that was 2007, 2008, or 8. I took 3rd in the world. So I still get people that ask me questions, you know, hey, you're still wrestling? That really was, talk about the Zygarnik effect, it really gave me a sense of closure to go back and to have that kind of success. And I'm saying it also as kind of a life lesson, you know, I mean, to be able to, you know, go back and live your dreams and to pursue your passions. It's something, you know, I think everyone should get the opportunity to do. And while many times we give up those childhood or adolescent passions thinking that they're irrational or, you know, as an adult I shouldn't do it. And I think the opposite. I think that if you get a chance to do the things that you love, it helps you be the best in all aspects of your life. That's my view. Philosophically, my joke about myself is I'm actively ignorant. I try to enter every situation with the idea that whatever my preconceived notion is, it's probably wrong. That what I think is the reason why other people or even myself are doing something is just my good ideas. And that the only way I'll find out is to participate and to listen and to ask questions. And oftentimes when employees, you know, I have 600 employees, oftentimes when I get frustrated in seeing them not perform in the ways that I think they should, when I ask questions, what I learn is that the problem was created by me and the systems that we used to run the company, that people don't perform badly because they're ill-motivated. Some do. I mean, there's evil in the world. It's not like I'm naive. But most people are trying their best, and they just don't know. And either you didn't give good directions, or there's inconsistent rewards, or there's a lack of feedback, or there's a lack of training. Rarely do people just not do things because they just don't want to do a good job. And that's probably my biggest strength as an executive is I've learned to recognize I don't know, and that the only way I learn is by asking questions and by harnessing the resources of those people around me. And the biggest mistake I've seen, and I see it a lot, is people, when they confront problems, isolate themselves and think they have to figure it out all themselves. And even when they do figure it out, they then impose those ideas on others, and the others resist it because they don't have ownership of those ideas. And that if you can instead, when you have problems, go to those that you see where the problem is and ask them what's going on, why are they doing it that way, is there a better way to do it, why aren't they doing it, and then I learn from that and then ask them to come up with the solutions, and oftentimes, even if it's not what I would have done, is much better than if I have imposed my ideas on it.
And I can see how psychology has helped you.
Yeah.
In running your restaurant. So let's talk about those. I mentioned at the beginning that you and your family were walking through Manhattan Beach, couldn't find the restaurant you wanted to. You had been working with Larry Cano.
Yes.
And he let you purchase, I believe, some El Chorritos were failing in Texas. But how did the whole concept come together for Blue Mesa Grill as you were working with El Chorrito?
Well, first of all, I want to credit my wife, Liz, because it wasn't just my decision. It was a decision we made together. And the original thing that you said about we wanted to go to a place that, you know, we wanted to create a place that we would go to. You know, we were just had Kate, our daughter, and we were looking for family places to go to. And there were either little mom-and-pop restaurants that were inconsistent and, you know, nice, but not really aimed at large amounts of people, or there were chain restaurants. And we said to ourselves, we really would like to create a quality restaurant, but that was big enough to make money and be a decent business model. I learned a lot at El Torito about Mexican food. I mean, I interacted with chefs from around the world. I went to hundreds of Mexican restaurants. I began to see a trend that was starting, and it was a combination of different things, you know, nouvelle cuisine, California cuisine, lighter food. And our feeling was that we could take some of these trends in business, in food service, healthier foods, and incorporate it with Mexican food. You know, Mexican food at that point was heavy, kind of monochromatic, you know, cheese, enchiladas, that kind of stuff. Very heavy, fill your gut kind of food. But we began to see at restaurants that were called contemporary Southwestern restaurants where they were taking the ingredients from Mexican food, the chilies, avocado, corn, but creating a much lighter, more modern, you know, type of food. And so that's what we wanted to do. And then we said, but we need to come up with a different physical package. Most of the Mexican restaurants either looked like sort of hole-in-the-wall joints or Mexican haciendas was the El Torito look, you know, creating this mythical hacienda that you would find in some, you know, some mythical Mexican city. I don't think they exist there either, but it was the idea of what an American would think of a hacienda. So we said, well, what could be a different approach? And we went to Santa Fe, and we started to look at that Southwestern design, places like Coyote Cafe that had the Santa Fe design look to it. And we said, if we could package it like that, it would work. And then El Torito had created a blue margarita called the Blue Mesa Margarita, which had that Santa Fe color, you know, the turquoise color, and the Southwestern name. And so I went back to El Torito and I said, could I steal this from you? Could I take that name? And they said, okay. And we, after some issues with other people using the name around the United States, we got the national trademark for Blue Mesa Grill and Blue Mesa, and that became the name of the concept. The Southwestern, the Santa Fe design became the architectural package using flagstone, natural elements, big wood lentils, the adobe kind of look that you see in Santa Fe, the kiva fireplaces, and that became the design structure. And then we took the Mexican food and created a lighter, more contemporary food. So instead of a grilled salmon, it's red chili salmon. Instead of salsa, we have jalapeno relish or papaya salsa. Instead of a chili relleno made with a canned chili. We have a fresh poblano chili with a blue corn batter with three different types of cheeses. And so we created a lighter, more contemporary version of the food in the Santa Fe atmosphere, and that became Blue Mesa Grill.
Well, you have four Blue Mesa restaurants in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Right.
You also have TNT / Tacos and Tequila in the Quadrangle. How does that differ from Blue Mesa Grill?
Blue Mesa's a big, full-service, casual-themed restaurant. So their average size is about 8,000 square feet. Big dining rooms, party rooms, bar. TNT is aimed at being a smaller footprint. It's 3,000 square feet. It's a stripped-down version of Blue Mesa. It's elemental. And so what are the key elements of Blue Mesa or Southwestern food? Our emphasis is a grill, and that's a literal concept. You have a charbroiler, you have steamers, you have fryers, you have all these different things. We emphasize grilling on a charbroiler to order. So grilling a piece of steak, grilling a piece of fish, grilling vegetables. So that became the key elemental aspect of the food at TNT, stripped down to basically tacos, burritos, salads. And then the emphasis of the bar was tequila. Great, fresh, handmade margaritas made with fresh squeezed lime juice, agave nectar, premium tequila. Let's make those two core elements, a lime or lemon in your right hand for the bar, fresh meat and vegetables on a grill in the kitchen, and let's target a younger customer, make it as much bar-oriented as food-oriented, so we're 50-50 food and liquor, where Blue Mesa is more 75% food, 25% liquor. It's more of a dining establishment. TNT is a bar and a kitchen and a bar, but they're both equal. And so for a younger clientele that's probably more interested in having a fun experience rather than a dining experience, that's what TNT is in the world of Mexican food.
Well, tell us basically two things. How can people find out more about your two concepts, A, and B, how can they become a chili head?
Well, first of all, a chili head is a person that is an opt-in member of our rewards club. And what they get as a chili head is, first of all, it costs nothing. We don't bombard you with communication. We email you once a month, maybe twice. We give you a free reward every month, usually an appetizer on the menu that we give you for free, a reward on your birthday, and then just a monthly newsletter where we tell you what's going on at the restaurant. Easiest way to be a chili head is go to either the Blue Mesa Grill website or the TNT website. And if you just put in Blue Mesa in Google or TNT Tacos and Tequilas, you'll get there. And I'm sure with this communication, there'll be links to our websites. But that's the easiest way. And then, or if you go into the restaurant and you get on the Wi-Fi, there's an opportunity right there to either use your mobile phone or your laptop and get on the Chili Head Club. And you asked me something else that I already forgot.
How to get hold of you. You mentioned that with both your websites.
Both websites, yeah. That's the easiest way.
And that's BlueMesaGrill.com and Tacos and, spell out, and A-N-D, TequilaTNT.com.
Thank you, because I wouldn't have remembered exactly that. I mean, the other thing I wanted to mention is one of the big changes in the overall company, Mesa Southwest, which is the owner of both of the concepts, is we've really shifted to be more of a catering and party business than just a restaurant business. There's been a lot of changes in the restaurant business with delivery, with places like Whole Foods getting into the prepared food business. Millennials don't lunch like baby boomers lunch. There's been a change with social media about how people eat. And bringing food to the customer is certainly a major, major change in the business. That's not just a fad. It's a trend. And if you're not bringing food to customers, you're going to be losing a piece of your business. We decided to emphasize catering versus to-go or delivery. First of all, most delivery is done through a third party, and they take a huge portion of your sales, 25%, 20%, sometimes less, but somewhere between 15 and 25%. So it's hard to make money using a third-party delivery service like Grubhub or one of those. Catering for us is a strength. We are the largest restaurant caterer in Texas in terms of numbers of events done. And you know, we're going to do close to $6 million in catering this year. So we're really, really good at both outside catering and parties. And the reason I mention it from a PR standpoint, right now is the time for holiday parties. So we would love for you to call us. Our numbers are on our website, or to go to the website. If you're looking for a holiday party, and most people, if they haven't done it by now, are in a panic mode right after Thanksgiving, give us a call. We're there for you. We've got unbelievably good menus, very competitive prices. And more than anything, we're really there to tailor the event to fit who you are. It goes back to my preconceptions. Rather than us telling you what we do, we're more interested in figuring out what you want and tailoring it to your needs.
Well, Jim can take care of, and his company can take care of your Christmas solutions for you. Jim, thank you very much for being part of Playmakers Talk Show. This was a wonderful interview. Thank you.
Thank you, and I really enjoyed it.
Jim Barron is who we've been speaking with. He is CEO of Blue Mesa Grill and TNT/Tacos and Tequila. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been great having Jim on our show. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com. We get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.